It's time for Mac Break Weekly. We are joined, as always, by Andy Iannocco, Renee Ritchie. Alex Lindsay dials in from Rwanda to talk about all the Mac news, the new iPad commercial, the new Mac Pro, and why Google bought Nest and not Apple. It's all coming up next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 385, recorded January 14th, 2014. FundleCam. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by LegalZoom. Visit LegalZoom.com to save on your legal needs and gain access to a network of legal plan attorneys for guidance. LegalZoom's not a law firm, but provides self-help services at your specific direction. Visit LegalZoom.com and use the offer code MBW to receive $10 off at checkout. And by 99 Designs, the world's largest graphic design marketplace. 99 Designs connects businesses seeking quality, affordable designs with a community of more than 250,000 graphic designers. Visit 99designs.com/MBW to receive a free power pack upgrade valued at $99. And by Audible.com to download the free audiobook of your choice. Go to Audible.com/MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers all of your Apple needs in obsessive detail. Andy Iannocco is here from the Chicago Sun-Times and the Celestial Waste of Bandwidth. And there he is with Mr. Teller. Now, come on, is that at the Wax Museum?
No, that's Pendulette, and that's about as...
Pendulette, yeah.
And unless you're like, you're running 6'3", 6'5", that's about as good as photos you're ever going to get next to him.
There's a disparity in size. But
A little bit. I could like scroll out a little bit to show you the whole photo, but that really is the operative.
I love it.
They do a meet and greet after their show at the Rio for anybody who, you know, wants to say hello. And I think that if you were to rent an Apple box or milk crate to people who were taking pictures with Penn, you would probably get your ticket price back times two.
Does Teller go too to these meet and greets?
Yeah.
Does he speak?
Indeed, he does. He just doesn't speak on stage. That's all. Actually, well, I don't want to give anything away, but you might hear him speak at some point during the show.
When we were in Vegas, because Andy and I hung out a little bit after New Media Expo, you were debating whether you should go to see the Penn and Teller show, and obviously you did the right thing.
It's like I'm a freelance journalist in a rapidly collapsing market. I had to, it's more like, you know, exactly to the penny what your like impulse buy level is. And if it's above that, you have to go, well, deep down, I knew I was going to go, but I knew that my father's voice would not leave my head unless I spent at least 2 days thinking, yeah, but okay, well, what if we spent the money on this instead? We go out to eat here and da, 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 da. Yeah, it was money well spent. If you anytime you're in, through, or over Vegas, definitely check out the Penn and Teller show, because even as a longtime fan who had seen like a lot of the different shows before, it was just fantastic.
Was it really expensive? Was it hundreds of dollars? Here I am sitting in front of a Mac Pro. I should not be asking that question.
Now you should be asking that question, because now that you have a Mac Pro, you have no money left.
Exactly right.
It's not that expensive. It was like $116, which is, yeah, I mean, that's
expensive.
More money. That's more money than I like to spend on like one unit of entertainment. But again, I'm a big fan. I'm in Vegas. I figure that was the money that I would have lost had I done any gambling whatsoever. And so instead of just 45 minutes of losing money and feeling like an idiot, at least I spent the money on something that I got a unit of entertainment out of.
Well, I'm glad you got a full unit.
A full unit of entertainment.
Yeah. Also here with us, it's Mr. Renee Ritchie, also back from Vegas. You guys did a great job up there on the stage with Callie Lewis of Geek Beat. That looked like a lot of work.
I have a newfound respect for what you do, Leo. It is so difficult to sit there and just do this for that many hours.
Yeah.
tell me about it.
I'm lucky I get to do 2 hours here quickly and then leave, but doing that all day every day.
Let me just ask, was the bass rumble booth right there next to you, as it has been in years past? What was it called?
Earthquake.
It was there.
Yes. Yeah. It was right there. It was deafening at times.
It's a really nice combination. Fortunately, at least with our mics, I don't know about your mics, they roll off at below 40 hertz. So the
you can feel it more than
feel it, but you don't hear it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, I see that Mr. Alex Lindsay has joined us, but I'm not sure from where. Last I saw was a picture of you in Hotel Rwanda having a lovely breakfast. Are you still in Kilgally?
I am. Awesome. I'm in the kind of the office of the school right now. So everyone has gone. I just finished a class, and I'm staying at the Mikolin, which is known as Hotel Rwanda.
So. What a beautiful picture. Somebody on your Google Plus said you are single-handedly, all by yourself, revising my opinion of Rwanda.
Well, I hope so. I'm not hoping that I'm single-handedly doing it, but I think that I've been blown away because it's not something that I expected when I first, came here. I mean, before we decided to work, in Rwanda, I came twice by myself just to kind of see what was going on and see what was actually happening. I spent a lot of time researching it before we committed to it. And I've just been, just blown away. I mean, I'm sitting in Rwanda with a pretty good connection. But it just grows so fast. Rwanda's kind of like Dubai, where they just tear an entire block down and put up a whole new set of buildings, and it's happening. So every time I come, it's like a different city, and I keep on getting lost.
Look at this picture I have on the screen of Alex's breakfast. That looks pretty nice.
Yeah, I was fortunate. I got up, since of course my sleep schedule's all off. I got up bright and early, so I get up early pretty most of the time. But I was very early, so I was able to see it and have my little coffee. So it was great.
And you have so much bandwidth there. What is, it looks like a high def picture here.
I know. We have at the school, especially in the evening when we're not competing with anything else, we get about 50 megs up and down. I was complaining about it during the day, and I was reminded by my partner here, the government partner, that we have the fifth fastest connection in the country. So it's not that everybody has 50 megs, but we do. So we teach the school, the African Digital Media Academy. We actually are teaching classes from California and other parts of the United States in Kigali. So we actually, the instructors are in the United States, and the students are in Kigali. So we've been experimenting with that last year. That's what the whole curriculum is going to be based on this year. So I'm down here just making sure that all the technical stuff is all set to make that transition over the next 2 or 3 months.
Awesome. Yeah, well, it's great. Great to have all three of you from Montreal, from Kilgally, from, I don't know, some small town in Rhode Island. And here we are in Petaluma. Someone in the chat room said, what does Leo need a studio for at all? Because something has to stitch this all together. And I think if this were all virtual, it's not quite as good as if one person's in a real spot.
Well, also, do you really, really, really want to have your business hinge on everybody's Skype connection working?
No.
There you go.
Lately, Skype has been a bear. Somebody emailed me, though, and said, what's happening? You're being DDoSed. You're being Skype DoSed. And this apparently, Chad, you might know, this happens on twitch.tv all the time. That griefers will come in, and if they can deduce what your Skype handle is, they just kind of bombard you. And so the trick is to use a non-guessable Skype handle, I guess.
Right. I know that Brian was hitting that issue a lot, and he had to come up with...
Brushwood,
yeah. And he was coming up with different usernames every week, and we'd email back and forth.
If we came up with a 10-digit number...
Yeah, pseudo-random.
Yeah, nobody's going to guess it. If they see it on the screen, we'd have to get a new one. I think we'll probably try that. Twitch, apparently it's a big problem on twitch.tv. So the internet, once again, a place where nice people gather to share ideas. So the big story is sort of a Mac story, sort of not an Apple story. Tony Fadell, who was a vice president in charge of iPod, commonly mistakenly credited with designing the iPod. I don't think that's the case. Although there's a famous scene, is it in Isaacson's biography? Stephen Levy refers to it, where Fadell comes into the room to present the idea of the iPod to Steve Jobs and has all the components on the table and snaps them together and says, here, with a little bit of showmanship, little Jobs like showmanship. And that was apparently the thing that convinced Jobs, yeah, we should probably be doing this product. Fidel founded a company called Nest with Matt, what's his last name? Rogers? I can't remember his last name. Raised around 100, sounds like $150 to $200 million to create a very interesting learning thermostat and more recently a talking smoke alarm. And Google just bought him yesterday for $3.2 billion in cash. $3.2 billion in cash. That's 5.8%, according to GigaOm, 5.8% of Google's cash position. So no matter what you think about that number, it is a significant number for both Google and obviously for Tony. It's a big thing.
Google Ventures owned part of it, so I'm guessing some of that was just bank account movement.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, Google Ventures, an early investor in this. They saw right away the value of Nest. The question a lot of people asked right away is, why not Apple? Do you think Apple wanted Nest?
I was kind of surprised that Apple. I just assumed that Apple eventually was going to buy Nest. It was the Apple of other things. And it was surprising that to me that Google beat them to it. There's got to be somebody at Apple just going, oh, I can't believe that.
Apple usually is very careful about verticals that they pick, and they simply might not believe that they're ready to enter into the home automation or home device vertical. They usually do one thing, they start annexing things that are next to it, and this is several orders down the line. Even if you count in watches and televisions, it's probably a while before they want to get to intelligent devices, if at all, because maybe iOS in the car will become iOS in the house, iOS on the camera everywhere. But it's also possible Tony Fadell doesn't fit into Apple's new leadership, and Tim Cook has shown that he would rather have a cohesive team than just all-star players on that team.
And also, it's kind of hard to even imagine how Google is going to how this is going to fit into Google's portfolio, apart from the idea of observing your movements through the house and being able to learn from you from your position there. It would be an odd thing for Apple to have bought. Philosophically, they're a very, very Apple-like company. When you read the press releases pre-acquisition, there is a lot about the magic and life and saving the planet. They really were pressing very, very hard. This isn't just a thermostat that will pay for itself because of the way that it adjusts your heating and cooling settings. This is a device that will help to heal the planet because it will reduce our dependency on greenhouse emissions. And for to survive the next 1,000 years, we're going to need a blah, 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 blah.
That's, so by the way, why John Doerr bet big on it with Kleiner Perkins, because they were betting on clean tech. None of the clean tech investments that they had did very well until now. So I'm sure that in the halls of Kleiner Perkins, there's like, yes, yes.
Everyone's bathing in champagne.
But you do have to – it almost feels like Apple is more judicious with its acquisitions and that this is for Google almost silly money, like – 5.8%.
But for Apple, it's really silly money.
I know. Apple has more cash than Google does. Yeah.
They could have bought it and then spent another $1 billion on a whole other team.
But they don't do that.
I know they don't do it, but I think that they should every once in a while, because I think that this is the thing is I think what makes a lot of sense for Google is that they're, you know, the idea that your whole world, and I think that you get more sensitive to this when you wear glass a lot. I'm not wearing it right now, but I do wear it a lot. And you just kind of, you want all of that information there. So being tied into all the other things that you're doing with your, and tying that whole experience in so that you're in that environment. And of course, the more they can keep you in that environment, the better it is. I don't think they necessarily need to know where your movements are or what temperature you're keeping in your house. But I think there's a lot of interest in having it where you don't have to look at another device or you don't have to think about something outside of your, and them having control of that process is I think, very useful.
You know, Apple already has a product team. I mean, they have a fantastic team.
I think that's the point.
Like make the iPhone and the iPod. Google doesn't. They have Motorola, which doesn't have a great product team. Now they have one of the best guys in the world. Apple's equivalent of this would be buying a fantastic server team, which they really need.
They do need that. No, I think you nailed it. Google gets out of this something it does not have, which is a consumer product division and consumer product designers. Apple's got that. That's what Apple does.
Yeah.
So there's less, I think, value in Nest to Apple, although there is underlying value to both Google and Apple in the intelligence of these devices. And I think that that's something that perhaps doesn't get paid much attention to. But really, Nest isn't about a thermostat or a smoke alarm. It's about intelligence and intelligent devices in your home.
Well, and I think that's something we saw hints of at CES is that, you know, this – I don't think anybody, and I think this might be part of why Google's going down this path, but maybe not. I don't think anybody really, other than Nest, has really figured out the Internet of Things very well.
Right.
So you go through CES and you see a lot of misfires. Misfire. Weird protocol, doesn't really work, hard to work with, hard to use, isn't going to work with anything else. These are all the things that all I saw last week was just that. And so Nest, and then you go, oh, this is great, and it just works, and it just does all those things. And I think but that is the future of every piece of electronics that we buy in anything that's got a chip in our house is going to be like that eventually. And Nest, I think, is ahead of everybody.
Yeah.
It's just hard to guess like what the real reason for buying this company was, because $3.2 billion, that's a lot of money, even by Google standards, that's a lot of money. And if you were to go to the abstract and simply say that our company has a problem and that we don't understand how to make consumer electronics, and not just things with keyboards and screens, but things that are more unitasky, just one in every house, one in every room of the house sort of things. We want to have that capability. If you have a $3.2 billion checkbook in which to solve that problem, it's interesting that they solve that problem by buying one company, as opposed to simply saying, we're going to get these two hires, we're going to buy these four companies, we're going to buy this facility.
Because I don't think they're only going to buy one company. It's interesting you raise that point, because I think this is the beginning of a buying spree for Google.
Again, if you start your spree with $3.2 billion,
it's a big,
cash.
It's like you,
it's Tony Fidel.
It's like you bought the oil refinery before you bought the car. I admit it.
I feel like this is just gut instinct. It feels to me as though there's something specific about this, not just this team of people, but this line of hardware. Because it is a compelling consumer device, but it also is a sensor-based device. And I think that this is a vote for a sensor-based world in which you need to have real-time data being collected that you can then leverage into new software products and new hardware products.
By the way, somebody in the chat room asked, this is 4.6 million Alexes. If that makes it easier for you to understand.
See, it seems so much more affordable that way. But yeah. I think that they are buying into a company that has a lot of upside, too. So you're not buying $3.2 billion just for...
Oh, yeah, but they're not going to sell billions of dollars in Nests, are they?
No, but if you look at... We don't know what kind of products they already have on... I mean, obviously, they have a very large vision of where they want to go. I mean, they're doing one thing at a time, and at their size, they could only do one thing at a time. The question is with Google money, with more engineering, are they going to put out more products more quickly? And do they have five or six that are already close to the gate? You know, that could be a whole other thing that's there, but I think that they could sell a lot of Nests. I mean, I think that there's still the market of people who have the disposable income who would want a Nest is far from penetrated, you know, far from saturated. You know,
I was penetrated and now I've withdrawn.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I have two Nests and decided not to install them in the new house because, first of all, machine intelligence on the thermostat is both overkill and impractical. It was turning the thermostat on when it thought I was around. You know, I mean, it's like, my movements are not so predictable that a learning thermostat's going to learn anything. And so it was turning on the heat at the wrong time, frankly. Hmm. It was too smart.
Smart for a song good.
Yeah. And I didn't see a lot of value to it. Plus, it's 250 smackaroos.
I think the other thing I think is important with this is that Nest is a well-respected brand for geeks. People love it. You have untold amounts of stories about people trying to install it. It becomes something you follow your friends doing on Twitter. And Android at home never really took off. Google doesn't have a great brand for home electronics. And they get Tony Fidel, if they do want to expand their product division,
right,
is a fantastic name to run that division or run, you know, home for Google in general.
Ohms Malik of GigaOhm immediately interviewed Tony. They have a good relationship, obviously. And Tony said the thing that, I mean, there's no question why this is good for Nest, but he said the interesting thing is that he can now go back to focusing on products and let Google help him scale, because one of the problems Nest was having was getting international. He said, you know, we went in the UK and it was a lot of work, and that's just one country and we've got, you know, hundreds more to go. So Google can scale them in ways that they couldn't with their existing infrastructure.
Well, and I think, again, once you have, you know, for me, like in my office, I started playing with Hue lights, and that once you start having that automation and being attached to your phone, I don't know, I find it to be fairly addictive.
I could see Google buying the Hue division. I could see, not Philips entirely, obviously, it's too big a company, but I could see them buying the Hue division. And I think there's lots of other smart home connected devices, Internet of Things companies that Google is probably looking at. I feel like this is much like, you know, Google's bought 8 robotics companies for Andy Rubin in 2013. I could see Google buying 8 home connected home companies in this year.
And offering a unified offering, which would be very compelling.
And that's what's missing, right? I'd be much more interested in Nest if it wasn't just this island, if it talks to everything else.
And I think part of the problem that stops me with a lot of home automation is there's Zigbee and there's this, you know, there's all these different protocols and all these different rules and Quickie Set is doing their own and there's, you know, everybody's got their own little bits. And so I'm like, oh, I don't know which one to, I just don't know which one to commit to. And I've been kind of sitting there going, I just wish, you know, I have to admit, I was just like, I just wish Apple or Google or somebody would just pull this all together and tell me which one I should get that will do all the things that I wanted to do. It'll do it well, because a lot of them that aren't, that are all these little bits, like this one part, like the lock works well, but all, if you look at all the other things that they do, it doesn't work that well. And so I don't want to compromise. And so I've been kind of waiting out, but I definitely want to automate my house. And I think a lot of people want to automate their house. I mean, so, once you start playing with it again, it's like the next, instead of getting sliders for your lights, now it's, you know, any color and any, you know, and being able to walk into your house without a keyless existence.
Unfortunately, this is no longer an Apple story because we've kind of wrapped up the part about why Apple didn't or wouldn't get them. But you know, Google does have Android at Home. This was their home automation initiative from about a year ago. I think that you nailed it, that this is Google's big ambition to go into the home, which nobody has successfully done. And
they go into the car and into the home, then they pretty much, well, they got your glass, they pretty much got it all. They got their whole existence all kind of tied into one big bow wrapped thing, and you don't have to drive anymore. But it's
to get Apple back into the conversation. I think that when you're trying to figure out why they made this acquisition, it's Google is fundamentally a different company from Apple, where they are they really are more born out of university research than just in terms of corporate philosophy, in that they do believe that we're going to fund this idea because it's an interesting idea. It seems to be related to what our larger goal is, but we're going to fund this because it's interesting. Whereas Apple, you know that they're not going to put any product on the market. They're not going to make any acquisition unless they are looking at the Lego fortress they built, and they see the one red brick in the white wall, and they say, we got to find something else to put into that hole right there. So when they buy a sensor company, it's because they have a specific idea of, here's what feature that we want for the next iPhone, and the only way we're going to be able to do it is to buy this company that has this technology for us. Whereas there is at least a possibility that that Google is saying, we've got lots of money. We believe that home automation is going to be a thing. We believe that sensor data is going to be a thing. And we also believe that just in terms of intellectual curiosity, that the way that we can integrate our products much more conveniently into people's lives if these services have an awareness of their actual day-to-day activity. So it may not be a specific hole in the wall they're trying to plug with this. It might be that they believe that this is going to be an interesting market, and they also just simply believe that it is okay for us to do something that is a little bit off of our direct path.
That's kind of how I feel like it's, as much as it is, it's still silly money. It's more than they paid for YouTube.
Again.
It's more than they paid for YouTube.
Yeah.
But YouTube wasn't making money at the time. The YouTube acquisition was clearly, this is going to hit big. We can either buy it early for cheap, or we can let it get into Facebook status, in which now that it's worth $50 billion, there's no way we can simply buy our own social media network. I think this is a different thing. Again, 3.2 billion. That is, you know, we all like read lots of reports about acquisitions and money being moved from one column to another, as Renee suggested. But 3.2 billion, when you can express any amount of money as a multiple percentage point of Google's money,
right?
So that's a big freaking check. I really want to close this deal, but I'm gonna have to call my spouse for approval on this check before I write it.
Yeah. You know?
If you're building the Star Trek machine, you're going to want to know what temperature it is in the room.
And that's their big dream, their big goal is to make Star Trek a reality. So they're going to – I think there's so many things involved, the synergy of the product, the vision, the ability to get data out of your houses. It just – in many ways, this is a great fit for Google. And I think they the amount of money they paid for it, to Andy's point, shows that.
Yes, they dream of being Star Trek The Next Generation, but turned out to be Star Trek Voyager.
I can't follow that. That's just too perfect.
What we don't know actually is how much Google Ventures investment was. If it, you know, if they had 10%, then you know, they saved $320 million on the deal.
Incredibly successful year for them.
Well, it is. You know, it's interesting. The two big investors, KP and Shasta, both basically are made whole by this.
Yeah.
That they're the Shasta fund is basically paid back, and based on Nest alone, Kleiner Perkins, I think, generates a 20x return on their investment, which means that Kleiner returns over 60% of the fund with that Nest investment alone of its clean tech fund. So
that's how it works. Fellas, that's how venture capital works.
That's it. One big hit.
You got 10 bad ones, one big one, you're set.
It's like the movie industry and Twit. I put myself right in that category. Anyway, enough said about that, but I thought a very interesting story, and we will, there'll be much more to say about it in time, including, of course, the big privacy question. Do you really want a Google Eye in your house watching you as you wander?
Leo's at 60 degrees.
It doesn't bother me at all, but then I have a Kinect in my living room, and I dance naked in front of it nightly, so I guess...
The NSA really doesn't like that, Leo.
Yeah, I do it for the NSA. I do it for them. Our show today, great, great panel, as always. I'm so glad Alex could join us from Rwanda, from Montreal, Rene Ritchie of iMore.com. You didn't get sick in CES, did you?
No, I have this thing where I just refuse to do it now, and it seems to work. Like the first couple of years, I got the plague every time, and then I thought it was silly. We better stop doing this, and
I know what happened. None of the East Coasters could get there because of snow. They're the ones that bring the disease.
We had people miss the show. Like their plane got canceled, and they only come in on Wednesday, and the show's over. So
they gave up. Those were the people who bring the disease.
When I stopped drinking like a fish and started sleeping normally, it turned out that my life was pretty much the same as 10. It was at home. You know,
Callie lost her voice, though. I think.
Yeah, she was working really hard.
Yeah. Anyway, we're going to take a break. Andy Inako also here from the Chicago Sun-Times. Lots more to talk about. And I have the Mac Pro, thanks to Ed Ingber, who very kindly drove it up from Saratoga this week so that I could play with it. I was wrong. I'm just going to say that. I was wrong about the Mac Pro. This thing is sweet. But first... word from LegalZoom.com. LegalZoom is not a law firm. It's actually something much better. LegalZoom helps you do the legal work you need to do to start your new business, to protect your family, stuff that you don't need a lawyer to do. It's self-help services. You walk through this simple form, a questionnaire on LegalZoom.com, and they can help you create a will or start your own business. They can help your New Year's resolutions come true. That's really what LegalZoom is all about. If you visit LegalZoom.com, you'll see a huge variety of legal services that they can provide. LLC, of course, is the one that set us up back in 2005. And it was Kevin Rose, now Google Ventures, by the way, who said, Leo, you know, I said, Kevin, I want to start a business. He said, Leo, you don't need a lawyer. Go to LegalZoom, get the LLC. Back then, I think it was 50 or 60 bucks. Now it's 99 bucks. Plus filing fees. I also got the trademark, the Twit trademark at LegalZoom. You can incorporate if you want to do S Corp or C Corp. You can even do that. And what's nice is they give you this book which has all the paperwork, all the stuff you need. I mean, it really sets you up. You could decide what state you want to be in. Look, if you don't have a last will and testament, you must go right now and get that $69 last will and testament. The nice thing about LegalZoom, they now have the ability to get legal advice from an attorney in a pre-negotiated flat rate, an attorney licensed in your state. You choose the attorney based on not only their profile, but unedited reviews from LegalZoom customers. Really, they do it all. Personal services, business services, trademarks and intellectual property, wills and trusts. Over 1 million entrepreneurs have started their business at LegalZoom.com. And I love this. 90% of the people who use LegalZoom have recommended it to friends and family. That is a very, very happy customer base, including me. No surprise fees, no hassles, no headaches. LegalZoom, not a law firm, but they can connect you with a third-party attorney if you need that for self-help services. Visit LegalZoom.com. Save on your legal needs like wills for $69, LLCs for $99 plus filing fees. Get that legal plan attorney for additional guidance. Don't put off the things you need to do that you want to do. Make your dreams come true. LegalZoom.com. Use our discount code MBW. That'll let them know you heard about it on Mac Break Weekly, and it'll give you $10 off at checkout. LegalZoom.com. Please do me a favor. Use the offer code MBW. Mac Break Weekly on the air. Alex Lindsay's here. Andy Inoko, Renee Ritchie. So how many Mac Pros did you order, Alex?
We're still trying to work out with our business rep, the leasing. And
it takes a while, right? They're not. Yeah, are they down to February now or March?
Yeah, I think February, March. And it's mostly just us sorting all of that out. We have a lot of computers on the lease, and so we're just trying to make sure that we can sort it all through.
So
we're probably going to get seven.
I was skeptical about the shape and the size. I was wrong. I mean, when I wanted to bring this in today, I just unplugged it, lifted it up. You carry it in one hand. It is very fast. It's beautiful, yes. And by the way, I do have it on the desk because it's smaller than you think. I mean, it really isn't very big. So I have it on my desk at home, hooked up to dual 27-inch monitors. A couple of important points, besides the fact that you already know it's very expensive and very fast. It's as fast as it is expensive. You're going to want expansion stuff. And actually, I'm curious, Alex, there's a lot of Thunderbolt stuff out, which is really just repurposed USB 3. In fact, I have two devices connected via USB 3. You don't get all the bandwidth that you should get. What you're looking for is a true Thunderbolt 2 device, and there's a dearth of those, and they're very expensive. The one thing I saw on Apple's site, I think, is a Promise RAID array that is truly Thunderbolt 2. Otherwise, you're not going to get the throughput you want.
It depends on what kind of throughput you need. I mean, you know,
I'm using, for instance, the drive is only 256 gigs in this base model, right? So I've got it. This is the Otherworld Computing SSD, USB 3 SSD. That's my data drive. It's another 256 gigs. It's the only way I could use this.
I think the PCI lanes are set up to prioritize the graphics cards and then Thunderbolt, and the USB 3 are sharing PCI lanes instead of getting dedicated ones.
Buffalo sells this as a Thunderbolt device. It's a bus-driven drive, 5,400 RPM drive, so there's a problem. And it's really just USB 3 with a Thunderbolt interface on it, right?
Well, and the big thing is that, well, what's really the limiter there is not going to be the USB 3. It's going to be the drive speed is going to really
slow down. But even on this very fast SSD, it's not, you know. So, and then the second issue is 4K monitors. And we talked about this on Twit with Marcus Brownlee. Who has a Mac Pro? There's you know, if you're going to get a real, so most of the monitors, quote 4K monitors, are 30 hertz refresh rate.
Well, because they didn't know how people are going to connect to it. I think that, you know, this is the kind of the wild, wild west right now, where they're trying to figure, you know, everyone's trying to figure out what that format's going to look like, and rather than getting together and talking about it, they're all trying to be the one that everyone follows.
Right. So you're going to want to look for one that's faster. And Marcus bought an Asus, Apple selling a Sharp, both of them over $3,000 for 30-inch, 31-inch displays.
I have to admit, you know, I was actually not that sure about 4K, we were streaming for Panasonic, so I was in the Panasonic booth all day and looking back and forth, and I'm afraid it happened where you know how your eye switches, and so it was like, HD's fine and 4K is whatever, and HD's fine and 4K is whatever, and then suddenly HD was mush.
You start to see it.
It was like back forth, but I didn't really see it. And then suddenly, with two of them sitting next to each other all day, and you keep on walking by it, and then suddenly you looked at it, and it's just like a photo. Like, it looks the way HD did to me when I was comparing it to SD. You know, like, but it took a little longer than SD for it to click like that. But now it's just like this nice sharp image, and I'm still going to wait because I think the formats are a little messy, and I think that it's still, you know, I think we need the prices to come down a little bit. But although Vizio now is getting down to a reasonable size for at least a TV set.
Well, that's
the
thing.
We need better.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I think we need better OS X support as well, because some of the Windows drivers are doing a better job. My boss ordered the Mac Pro. He hasn't got it yet, but he got three 4K monitors arrived already. So he's been trying to hook them up to his MacBook Pro. And at first, he could only get one running on Thunderbolt, one running on HDMI, both at 30 hertz. Now he's got both of them running off of Thunderbolt, but the HDMI is only giving him 1080. And he had to hack to get, because I think he got the Dells, and they're not officially supported yet. So he had to hack to make it recognize the Dells as 4K monitors, and he's got it running, but it's still, the pixels are tiny because you can't do the overscan, sort of the scaling modes like you can on the Retina MacBook Pro displays. So it needs, we need both, you know, a better standard for it and better support from OS X before we get the glorious giant screens that we really want.
So it's just a little caveat that you're going to get this thing and you're going to find that the support for the ecosystem is not there yet. It's just early days.
Bleeding edge still.
Yeah. However,
it's beautiful.
I was looking at his screens this morning, and it, like, the stuff is tiny, but it is so gorgeous.
Oh, it's beautiful. And the on the Mac Pro, the design is exactly right. This giant thermal core with a single big fan at the bottom that takes air from the bottom and blows it up through the top. Even when working, you know, it's hard to get this thing to work hard. This is a base unit, 3.7 gigahertz Xeon E5 quad core, but it's hard to get it to work at all. So I ran, you know, BioShock Infinite at the highest settings, didn't challenge it in the least. But if it were to get hot, the cooling's excellent. I can't get it to heat up. And it's dead silent. You know, it's funny because when I hooked up the Buffalo drive, all of a sudden I was like, what's that sound? And I realized, oh no, the hard drive, I'm not hearing the computer at all. 0 dB. I mean, it is silent. It's so silent that this was making a ruckus.
And apparently the GPUs and the CPU aren't expected to all be on at the same time anyway. So the thermal core is more than sufficient at moving whichever one, or maybe for a few seconds, two of them are actually working.
Yeah, so I'm going to have to shoot some 4K video. I'm going to borrow. Hey, do we still have that Black Magic 4K camera?
I can ask.
Does Russell?
I think we do.
Russell's reviewing that, I think.
We have Reds downstairs.
Okay.
Oh.
Maybe I'll go down to the basement and say hi to Red. I need some 4K, what is it, 222 video? What do I want? Something completely uncompressed?
You could shoot RAW with the Red cameras, you know.
And then what should I do? I should render it as a MPEG-4 or something. See how long that takes.
Real player.
That's it. Put in the real format. Anyway, if you've got $3,000 burning a hole in your pocket, I'm glad I got it. And thank you, Ed Ingber, for making that possible. And Alex, when you get back, you can play with it.
I do think that Apple kind of did a great service to everybody by having supply so constrained early.
Yes.
Because you get your whatever horniness that you had to like immediately buy one. If they were available in quantity the day that they originally shipped to anybody, then there'd be a lot of people who now are like, now that it's 2 months later or a month later, they're thinking, then again, if I'm going to spend $3,000, let's at least wait to see other people if they're really that good.
Because I was ready to marry one, but even Massachusetts wouldn't allow that.
Even Massachusetts.
Says the Canadian.
Canadian.
You know, the first state that legalizes marriages between geeks and Mac pros, I'm moving. I'm trying to find my Black Magic disk benchmark, because the internal drive is so fast. You just go, what a wow. Wow.
And then you start trying to figure out what to do with that.
Yeah, there's nothing I could do with it. It's crazy. Cray-cray. It's cray-cray fast.
Yeah, for the machines that we're going to be using for Hangouts, our plan was to just get the very base model. But the production machines, we're probably going to go ahead and put as much of the drive in as we can, just because we know there are times we're going to want to use it.
So Blackmagic does this so that you can see whether it can ingest your video. It's green check marks in every square. Write speed of 756 megabytes per second. Read speed of very close to a gigabyte a second. I mean, it pegged this meter like boom.
And you know, we always have to put this in perspective. I think in 1994, we had to reformat our RAIDs every week to make sure that we could maintain 30 megs a second, on our Media 100.
Right, 30 megs.
Yeah. 30 megs a second, and that was so we could get uncompressed not even uncompressed, but mostly uncompressed SD, so that we could work. And then uncompressed, we had to build RAIDs, and, to uncompress, 2005, we were building those huge RAIDs for MacBreak. And those were, those just had to tag out at about 220 megs a second. And those were like $11,000 each. And now it's,
look at this,
In your computer.
In your computer. Well, it's because it's dual bus PCI. Yeah, I mean Apple's done a lot to make that fast, but boy, it's fast.
And by the way, one of the things that that's really good for those of you wondering what you would do with that kind of speed, compression. If you're doing a lot of compression, one of the things that really actually you're grabbing a lot of footage and you're actually churning it through, and the processor usually handles that really quickly. And what really oftentimes is the limiter is actually the drive. So having a drive with that kind of read-write speed actually will oftentimes speed up if you're trying to compress to H.264 from an uncompressed file or an Apple ProRes file or something like that. You may see a lot of increases. So something a little bit more mundane than 3D or other big heavy editing tools, if you're doing that, that's another good reason to have really, really fast drives.
Do you think that this will ever be a good buy for just your average user?
Well, it really runs Safari very quickly.
My mom would love this.
it can almost run Flash.
Really cool. I can definitely see like producers in Hollywood getting it because it looks cool. But I think that, the iMacs are pretty beefy at this point.
And so that's what Ed did. Ed, the reason I have this is because Ed had buyer's remorse. He said, I don't need this. I'm going to get an iMac. Yeah. And he was absolutely right. That's the thing to get for 99.9%. But for the one percenters,
those one percenters,
and also it's not like an iMac where they can't really tell which one you have, or the old Mac Pro where they can't really tell obvious. Which one you have.
Yeah.
Either you have that latest, greatest, incredibly awesome Xenon based Mac Pro, or you do not.
Right.
And if you do not, if you're sufficiently weak willed, that's a problem that you feel as though it's worth $3,000.
I actually put this in the window of my house. With a light on it.
Like the Swiss Army knife, like window display. You just need to have rotating. It like slowly rotating.
I would just wear it, Leo. Seriously. I mean, at this point, just wear it.
What it comes with, which is interesting, is black Apple stickers. It's the only ones I've ever seen that are black. Whoa. Normally they're white, right? So there's that.
That means they can put it on the bumper of your car and everyone knows that you have it.
Yeah, it's basically saying, follow me home and steal my computer.
Well, it saves you from having to put it in the backseat window all the time to show it off. Now you can just put a sticker there and say,
I feel so guilty owning this. I just feel so guilty.
Maybe that's another third party opportunity. If you can manufacture out of a good lightweight plastic, like a rim like this big circular rim, you can snap onto the bottom of it so you can wear it like an Abe Lincoln hat when you go out.
There
you go. No one's going to steal it from your office, and everyone will know that you own the Abe Lincoln
hat. The Mac Pro hat.
It'll keep your head warm.
Exactly. It'll conduct heat away from the top of your head on hot days.
That's true.
Thus reducing your summer thermal load by at least 12%.
And on a cold day, just turn it around and it'll blow hot air down on your head.
Nice. You just wear it upside down on cold days.
I got to say, Dark Castle runs great on this, though.
Like a heat pump to your head.
I literally remember a 386 Dell, or no, it was Digital Equipment, 386 PC worth $10,000 in my desk. And this is many years ago, but that was a 386.
Elisa was like that, I think, too.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is not...
That was real money back then, Leo.
Yeah. 10 grand was a lot of money back then.
Yeah, but the differences between... What was the mid-range computer back then? That was still about...
Oh, yeah, this was the highest end you could get. This was basically considered a workstation at that time. So I got to point out one other thing. You'd think for all that money, Apple would throw in a mouse and a keyboard. No.
Nope.
Nothing. Not a Thunderbolt cable, nothing.
You got a power cable, Leo, and you're happy to get it.
Yes.
Yeah.
A power cable and black stickers.
Hey, does it have a special power cable or is it a normal power cable?
It's black.
Well, does it have, is it two prongs?
No, it's the normal. It's the same one as on the Cinema. It's that, that I'd pull it out, but it would. It's a normal one. You could see it here, right? It's a normal one right here. It's just like, you know, and it's got that nice soft silicone that Apple does for its power.
You know, they do that really well. They do that on the HDMI cables, too.
Yeah, it's pretty.
And they really are. Like, all of our HDMI cables, it's really silly. All of our HDMI cables that we use for production are all the Apple ones because they just, they're not as harsh and they just pop right out and they're not too thin and it's very weird. Yeah. Like, why if someone else doesn't do that?
It's also something to think about when you see that kind of packaging that that is part of the factor when they're budgeting this out, that how much will it cost us to ship these across the country and across the world?
Right.
And that's the minimalist packaging is all about. If they can get one more unit per box, if they can get X more units per container, they know exactly how much money they're saving on that.
Yeah.
But enjoy the free stickers.
Where's the black keyboard?
They'll give you anything. In terms of adding to the bulk of that package, they will give you anything that is flat and made out of plastic.
Yeah, the manual and a sticker.
Where's the black keyboard and mouse, though, Leo? You need to color coordinate now.
That's right. I mean, come on, Apple. I spent $3,300 on this thing. Give me a keyboard, a mouse, something.
Anodized black phone.
See, that is consistently the only thing I don't like about the Apple stores, because they are 10 out of 10 in every single category. I just remember when I spent $1,500 on Google Glass, I was like one of them high society dames getting a $5,000 like nail treatment. I went to it was like a salon. They asked me if I wanted a beverage. They sat me down. They set it up for me. They stayed cookies with me for an hour. The two times I've bought like MacBooks in the Mac store, it's like, oh, you're gonna pick up that thing you dropped $2,000 on? Okay, here, bye.
I agree. They're way too casual. I want applause. I want a lineup of blue-shirted employees going, well done. You've just spent thousands of dollars on hardware from Apple.
Makes me feel a little worse.
A little neck massage. I freely.
Can you at least use your bathroom? No.
No. No. Employees only. You got a blue T-shirt. I do have to say that I was completely wrong. I really thought that this would be a mega bundle. It would have been a very cheap way for Apple to kind of make this more palatable is by bundling all the pro apps on it or something. They don't even give you a goddamn keyboard.
Nope.
So I was wrong.
But what kind of keyboard could they bundle with it that would satisfy that big swath of people who are buying the Mac Pro?
Just black make it black.
I think we could come up with a long list of things that I'm officially over. Like I'm over the idea that Apple doesn't include USB accessories with these devices, because all right, I mean, it would be nice to get these things, but truth be told, over on my desk over there, there is a beautiful Logitech keyboard I've been using for 3.5 years because it's my favorite, that will not displace whatever is cheap and light and thin enough to include in a package. You know, I'm over it.
I just got to say, you buy an iMac, you get a keyboard and a mouse.
And one of the things that I think one of the things with this also is I think that the design team went all out, because I personally think this is probably the last form factor of the Mac Pro ever. You know, like, I think that
this is perfect, but
what I'm saying is, I don't mean that it's going to, I just think that they're, you know, this is the last time they're going to do this. And when we look at how long it took to get from the cheese grater to this.
Well, no, come on. 5 years from now, they're going to have a new Mac Pro. Come on, right?
20 years?
No, 5. 3.
It'll be half the size, so. Alex. I'll make it half the size.
I tell you, when you compare this to the cheese grater Mac Pro, now, admittedly, that had 6 drive bays, but this is so fast. This is so much power in this little bitty thing. It's pretty cool for that reason alone.
No, I think it's awesome, and I'm just saying.
Are you saying there will be no more Mac Pros, or they're just going to continue to make Mac Pros that look like this?
They'll continue to make Mac Pros look like this until there'll be no Mac Pros. When will there be no Mac Pros?
Someday.
10 years. 10 years from now.
What will you get instead?
Your touchscreen weird thing that they have out will be fast enough, and it's just not going to be their market. I still think that they're moving away from this. I think this is a great way to close that off and build something that we're all going to be happy with for at least 4 or 5 years. And then we'll wonder where
I could see them doing one that is the size and shape of a Rubik's cube.
I just can't help but think that this, we're soon, in a couple of weeks, it'll be the 30th anniversary of the original Macintosh. And though the shape has changed, the form has changed, we still have keyboard here, pointing device here, screen here. So if they have that hasn't changed, and that basic design has gone for at least 10 years before that. So I don't know.
I think we should just enjoy the moment and enjoy the fact that we have this crazy fast computer and the fact that Apple, this is not Apple's market anymore. And I think that they're going to give us this last little push out, and a lot of us are going to keep on using it and loving it. But I don't think that we're going to, I don't mean to bring everybody down,
like,
but I
just, about I, know,
I was looking at it.
I don't know if it's going to be that blatant. I think that in 5 years' time, it's possible that Apple has they do what they want, and what they want to do is something they do extremely well. And I think that if in 5 years from now there's no more Mac Pro, it's because they have figured out how to make beautiful computers for the majority of the population that works for them even better. Even better than a computer that costs half as much they can possibly afford, but they'll start to let go of a lot of the pro users, and a lot of the pro users in frustration will leave for other platforms.
They decided that wasn't a market that was big enough to
servers is not something that Apple was ever really 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 good at. The Mac Mini has been in every single server room I've seen, but that's sort of a freak case, I think. In terms of what administrators really want to see from servers, Apple is just not interested in or willing to make that. But Apple has done really, really well making pro-level computers. In terms of giving a tool that is manifestly the weapon of a warrior for creative people who are finding the creative temper. Oh, fondle, oh, corner radius, oh, index of refraction of the paint gloss.
Perfect circle, perfect aluminum circle.
I'm just going to say, this is the last Mac Pro I'll ever own. I love it.
You look like you're fondling Mr. Bigglesworth.
I'll never leave you.
For the record, there are five different witticisms that I've thought of and then said, no, we better not say that. I like doing this show, and I like Twit existing. And if I said one of those things, one or both of those things would cease to be true anymore.
I think that what really, and by the way, please don't send me email saying you nitwit, you could buy a keyboard and mouse for $15. I know I have plenty of keyboards and mice. I'm just joking. I do have to say, and a final word on this. For whatever, you know, it's way overpriced. Nobody needs the power. Blah blah blah. This is a computer you literally can fall in love with. I'm just saying.
Yeah, Apple does that so well.
It's like owning a Lamborghini.
I'm kind of fond of it.
I think I would get more day to day enjoyment from a Mac Pro than a Lamborghini, in my opinion.
What am I going to do with you? And I open the browser and I go to Facebook. It's depressing. But
I'm not likely to send a Mac Pro into a ditch by the side of a road. That's one thing for sure.
Leo, how good is it at home theater PC?
I'm not using it as home. Believe it or not, the Xbox One is a perfect home theater PC, and I'm using that as my home theater PC, and that's fine.
It's too inexpensive. You need a much more expensive home.
The real truth is I have absolutely zero need for this, but I do love it. I really, it's something about it. You just kind of fall in love with it. It's hard to describe.
That's always been one of Apple's strengths, and it's not a trivial thing either.
You're saying it's okay, Andy.
I'm saying do not turn. There are objects in that very room you're sitting in right now that are capable of returning your love in a significant way that will pay off for you in the long run. As opposed to forcing you to go find a box of wet naps and get that stuff off your Mac Pro. There's so many laptops out there that I think are really really great. I really like my new Retina MacBook, but I also like these $250 Chromebooks. And whatever the advantages of a Chromebook are, when you take it out of the box, you don't feel like, oh man, that is manifestly the weapon of a king. This is a beautiful thing.
The Fondle Cam.
Yeah.
Welcome to Cinemax, 1 a.m.
Coming up at 1:10.
The reason we get into this business for a lot of us, certainly it was for me, is a love of technology, a love of, you know, Apple's taught us a love of design.
Dare not speak its name.
And every once in a while, an object comes out that's a really fetishistically beautiful.
And they're rare. And when they come out, you know, you want to kind of celebrate them and honor them. And this is
pretty... there's a reason why so many of the people on this show and listening to this show have a G4 Mac Cube.
Exactly.
That is not in storage, not been given away. It's just a beautiful object that gives them pleasure to simply have it on the shelf somewhere. That's not an easy thing for a tech company to. Okay, now you're giving me out a little bit.
I shall call her.
If next week we find that you put like a set of wax lips on the side of that, I might have to sit out a couple of shows.
But you know,
it's just going to be flaunting that forever and staying young. You know,
it could be my pillow wife. All right, enough of this silliness. It is, you mentioned.
You know what we ought to do? Well, I do have to admit, and because it would show all of it. We should go back and look at when they first announced it, and then have all of our comments.
I freely admit, I mocked it.
I don't want to do this at all.
I thought it was stupid. I said, who's going to want to buy this? It starts at $3,000, but by the time you equip it properly, you're talking $10,000. All of that's still true. In fact,
and then you saw it,
and then I saw it, and it is. It's like
the harp music.
It's like if you knew that falling in love with Scarlett Johansson would cost you a lot of money and a lot of heartbreak, and that eventually George Clooney would come along and steal her away, but you still.
Mac Pro, you complete me.
It is the 30th anniversary. Hey, look, I remember going to Macy's. In March 1984, plunking down my Macy's card, spending $2,500 for a Mac, the original Macintosh that did nothing, basically. You had to swap disks 100 times to copy a file. And you know, and I loved that, too, just as much. 30 years ago, and in fact, January 25th, there is an event you should all come to in Cupertino at the Flint Center, where the Macintosh was originally announced on January 25th, 30 years ago, 1984. Mark Cantor sent me a little video inviting you and me and everybody else. Before there was Google, Facebook, Twitter, there was the Macintosh. And I don't know where this panel discussion was, but Steve Jobs.
And I'd like them to just take 30 seconds and introduce themselves and maybe talk a little bit about the piece that they did, starting with my right.
Introducing the Mac team. I guess this was a Flint
Center. And I worked a little bit on the ROM, and I helped Bruce Horn with the Finder.
My name's Andy Hertzfeld, and I worked on a lot of the system software for Macintosh.
My name's Randy Wigginton, and I wrote the word processor.
My name's Bill Atkinson. I did the QuickDraw graphics primitives and the Mac Paint application.
I'm Bruce Horn, and I worked on the ROM a little and on the Finder with Steve Capps.
My name is Burl Smith, and I designed the digital logic board for Macintosh.
I'm Owen Benshorn. I did the printing.
My name is Ronnie Seabach, and I wrote the mouse lesson that you get on your Mac Guide disk and the font.
That is going to be an event. I'm looking forward to going to that, celebrating the 30th anniversary of the announcement of the Macintosh at Flint Center, same place. I expect many of those people, obviously a few won't, but many of those people will be there. And I'm sure Woz will be there. I know I've heard from a lot
of people.
They
should let us stream it.
Mark, let us stream it. That's a great idea.
Or at least stream it the next day.
That's a great idea. Let me send him an email. That's a very good idea, because that's the kind of thing I know our audience would be very, very interested in. Let's take a break. I'm getting a little emotional here.
Mop for Mr. Laporte. Move
the Mac Pro out of his eye line.
It's so beautiful. I have nothing. There's nothing I can do with it. Well, I have an iMovie I'd like to work on, and then I'm going to email some people. Maybe go do some Sudoku puzzles.
We're all very happy for you, Leo. We joke, but we're all very happy for you.
Can it launch Quick Look at an acceptable speed? That's all I want to know.
You mean when you press space bar? Yeah. It does. There's no hesitation in anything it does. It does it with confidence and assurance.
So when you do a spotlight search, it'll actually search on the search term you type, not on the letters 4 through 19.
Yeah, even with Mavericks.
That's worth $3,000 right there.
Yeah.
It'll give you the result before you search.
Oh, God.
Fondle. Nice.
My darling, I can't get enough of your love, baby.
I don't know why.
You complete me.
Wherever you are.
I'm so sorry.
I am here in your heart, and my heart will go on.
It's so wrong. I need Bruno Mars, some flowers, a little champagne.
So Vegas, baby.
Some candlelight. Our show.
You guys want to be alone, Leo?
I do. I want to just leave right now with my Mac Pro and just. Design is very important to those of us who live in the Apple world. Anybody who kind of follows Apple for any length of time understands that, I think, right? And of course, as Steve Jobs always said, it's the intersection of technology and science and liberal arts. And if you are a great scientist, a great programmer, maybe you're a great cook, but you need great designs, I want to tell you about 99 Designs. 99 Designs brings you with the world's largest graphic design marketplace to over 250,000 graphic designers who are waiting to help you make your stuff look better. Perhaps you're interested in a landing page design. That's really, you know, the first thing people see of your business often on the web. 99 Designs, you tell them what you need. Dozens of designers from the community will say, I got an idea. What about this? You give them some feedback. You refine the design. You select the designer you want. You pay for your favorite. Do you need fresh marketing collateral? 99 Designs offers all kinds of marketing design. You can get a sleek, affordable email template, a banner ad, an infographic. You could do a vehicle wrap design. We do T-shirts. App designers use 99 Designs. Landing pages start at just $2.99. You could start your next graphic design project at 99designs.com for as little as $199. And I invite you to go to 99designs.com/MBW. to get your $99 power pack of services for free. That gives you more designer time and attention. 99 Designs will bold, highlight, and feature your design project in their marketplace, so you'll get roughly twice as many designs. Right now at 99designs.com, there are thousands of design contests going on. There are hundreds of thousands of designers participating. The payouts last month alone, $1.4 million to designers, $66 million to date. 99 Designs. You're going to love it. 99designs.com/MBW for that $99 power pack of services for free. Leo Laporte with Andy Inatko, with Renee Ritchie, with Alex Lindsay. Okay. Let's go from the sublime to the ridiculous. If you were watching the NFL playoffs, do you get to see football at all in Kilgally? No, probably not.
You know, the problem is both weekends I've been flying, so I just see it as I go through the airport. So I think I was in like Istanbul or something in the lounge when.
Well, let me play this for you because you would have seen this on the NFL playoffs, and I wonder. This is the new iPad ad, and I really wonder what the reaction of people is, particularly the narration. Listen.
You don't read and write poetry because it's cute. We read and write poetry because we are members of the human race. And the human race is filled with passion. Medicine, law, business, engineering, these are noble pursuits necessary to sustain life. But poetry, beauty, romance, love, these are what we stay alive for. Quote from Whitman, O me, O life, of the questions of these recurring, of the endless trains of the faithless, of cities filled with the foolish.
How much?
What good amid these, O me, O life? Answer, that you are here. That
does
life
it work with USB?
And identity. That the powerful play goes on and you may contribute a verse.
Does it come with a case, or do I have to buy that extra?
Powerful play.
Does it come with a giant windmill?
You.
And who's this guy, and why is he looking at me like that?
What will your verse be?
I got to say, it makes me want to go out and rent Dead Poets Society. And I bet the rentals for Dead Poets Society is through the roof tomorrow.
I was going to say, I wondered if who did the voiceover for that?
It's Robin Williams. It's literally from the Dead Poets Society. That's why the audio is so crappy. You can barely hear what he's saying.
Okay. I've not seen Dead Poets Society, so
I don't know. Andy, what? Great movie. It's wicked good.
What?
I was in my non-Robin Williams drama phase. I've been burned too often.
That's kind of a permanent phase.
Moscow on the Hudson left scars.
That's kind of a permanent phase. This was a good one. This was a good one.
Photo?
Yeah. But So a couple of things come to mind. A number of people said that sounds much like the voice in the 1984 commercial. Mm-hmm. The Big Brother voice. Okay, that's weird. It also feels like it's somebody at Apple trying to do Here's to the Crazy Ones, mm-hmm. but failing. And couldn't they just have brought Robin in to recreate that in a sound booth with It Sounds Good?
Unless I said no.
It's just puzzling. Is that a successful ad?
It's a very pretty object. I'll put it that way. But again,
The images are brilliant. I love the images.
It's unfortunately that's all I'm left saying. I don't know whether it's a good ad or a bad ad because only someone inside Apple apparently knows what that was meant to achieve. But I mean, I was joking around during the voiceover, but I think that most people, when they're looking at a commercial like that, they're thinking, what is being advertised here? How much does it cost? What can it do for me?
Right.
And there's aspirational advertising, and a lot of advertising not only gives you the practical stuff, but also just gets you in the mood where you start feeling your imagination runs wild about the product. But I think that this sort of tips over to the other side where, again, what are you advertising for me? I rarely scuba with a tablet computer, so perhaps that's not the computer for me.
If you actually go to the website, they actually are breaking down a lot of the ad. So the ad actually is they're showing a lot of the pieces from the ads and how the iPad's being used in those areas.
Taking exploration to new depths, so that's the ocean. Mm-hmm. Thing, elevating the expedition, world-class mountaineers.
A commercial that you understand after you go to a website. That's always the gold standard.
But I think that a lot of this is really pushing the iPad as a creation device rather than a consumption device. Because if you look at how that juxtaposes it against the Kindle, which is purely a consumption device.
Yeah.
This is
all creative enterprise. This is not somebody playing video games. You're absolutely right.
It's
obviously the beginning of a campaign that will answer the question, what will your verse be?
And it's also not productivity, it's creation. And one of the problems Apple's had recently is they didn't show off the iPad on stage since, I think, Steve Jobs in 2011 with the iPad 2. And they did that awesome, technology alone is not enough, the We Believe commercial. And then they let the story of the iPad die. They talked about retina displays and they talked about, speeds and feeds, which is usually something they don't do. And only recently with the iPad Life commercial did they get back to try to start telling the story of iPad again. Right. And this might not be a great... might not be 100% successful. I found it really heavy. Both Williams' narrative and the music that was accompanying it was very,
very grim,
strong, and overbearing almost. And I think it wasn't as good as it could have been, but I am delighted that Apple is once again talking about what you can do with an iPad and not just the technology they're putting into it.
That's fair.
It definitely continues a message that they started off with the introduction of the Air, where remember we were talking about that after the launch event. About how this is one of the first times in a while in which the promo video was not, again, kids playing virtual piano and kids and people playing games and people entertaining themselves. It was part of that first push saying that the iPad is now officially a computer in the eyes of Apple. It's not something that we don't know exactly what it is, but we're happy to let you guys figure out what that is. It really is now. It does occupy the good slot in the good, better, best slot of mobile computers. But it's just that the only thing that worry is too strong a word, but the only thing that's on my mind is that while people are looking at that computer, the next commercial break, there is one of the most to the point and in your face Kindle Fire commercials that says here is what the iPad Air does, here is what the Kindle Fire does, here's how much this costs, here's how much that costs. You figure out for yourself whether or not this amount of money is certainly worth it.
But I think that's exactly the point, because what Apple's saying is, if you compare those things together, maybe our product doesn't look like the Kindle Air, like the Kindle Fire. But if you think about it as a creation device, let's have the Kindle Fire try to go do that with us head to head.
But
I think that might be some of the push there.
It's a BMW versus the commercial.
That's absolutely true. I'm just saying that I don't know if the ad that Apple put together is making that point effectively. I guess the way I could describe it is that to me it feels like a screensaver commercial where it's just playing and it's better than a blank screen and it holds your attention in that way, but it doesn't guide your thinking in any way and it doesn't leave you with a message. All it leaves me is with the awareness that there are things called iPads out there and people do things with them.
It is two very different. Here's the Kindle Fire ad, by the way. It's two very different advertising styles. This is utilitarian. This is like, here's what it does, and here's what it costs. And then these Apple ad, which is very much an aspirational ad. Like the message, I guess, of the Apple ad is, if you use an iPad, you can aspire to great things. What will your great thing be? I like that idea. This is much more. This Kindle ad's very, you know, it's about price. It's about, you know,
the new Kindle Fire HDX
I would expect this, by the way, from Amazon, which is a much more utilitarian company than Apple is.
Well, and I think that as the beginning of a campaign of really talking about, I'm expecting after this that what we're going to see a lot of in iPad, because I still think that we're in this very long curve where Apple's moving us away from, I know we've said it before, OS 10 to iOS. And now we're going to spend the next 2 years explaining to you why you don't need your laptop, you know, and so, developing it as a creation device. And I think the other possible reason for this is that an ad exec was sitting around with his Apple client and said, let's make a Terrence Malick commercial.
It was. That's like, exactly what it was. It was
Terrence Malick. And he goes, we could make a whole commercial that
way. The tree of life was equally puzzling to me.
But can you imagine this commercial with lighter music?
And do you think we could hire Terrence Malick to do this? Oh, I don't know. We'll just watch a lot of Terrence Malick films and then we'll make it just like it.
Yeah. I think Sarah Lane said Renee, that it made her feel creepy. It was very kind of creepy. And like the Budo dancer at looking at you askance, it's like, why? What are you doing? What? Me? I mean, it didn't make you feel good. It didn't make me feel good.
It's a very important lesson in how certain visuals and certain sounds can come together to create a mood that's just a little bit off of what you want, like a little bit lighter music. If they change some of the shots differently, then you have that everyday photo commercial that everybody loved. But you put the music is too hard, the narrative is too serious, and the people keep staring at you like that. And suddenly, you know, it takes what could have been a fantastic commercial and makes it, you know, good direction, not perfect delivery.
Well, you've seen the main problem with it is that they're showing me all these great visuals, but they're not showing me a single thing that I myself could see myself ever doing. If you put it in a classroom, if you put it into a coffee shop, if you put it into a living room, and you show me that this can be done for a lot more things than I imagine it can be done, I can imagine myself wanting to do those things. But again, I've been scuba diving once, loved it, would love to do it again. I'm not sure if I would ever take an iPad down there with me.
No.
Yeah, Peter said it made him feel bad about himself.
He's wasting his life. Well, he's a bad person, and he should feel bad.
If you watch Tech News Today this morning, Horace Dediu, who I always admire and read with great interest, even though I don't maybe understand everything he says, of Asimco, joined Mike and Sarah talking about his blog post of yesterday when Apple reached parity with Windows. He made, I thought, a really interesting point. He said 10 years ago, the way computer purchases worked was the biggest buyers were big companies, IT directors who bought thousands of PCs running Windows for the company. The employees then went home and bought Windows computers at home because that's what the IT guy says you should have. And it drove sales. And it was why Windows became absolutely dominant in the 90s and to some degree the 2000s. He said the big change was when people started bringing in their own device and suddenly it cracked the Windows monopoly because people saw other devices. They tried other devices. He said what really happens now is there's a much broader diversity. Yes, there are still more Windows PCs by far, 337 Windows PCs sold in 2012 compared to perhaps 17 million Macintoshes. It's a big difference. But because of the broad diversity of the market, in effect, he says Apple has reached parity with Windows. It's no longer a Windows world. And I thought that was very interesting. And a lot of that is because of these devices, because of iPhones and iPads. That's what cracked the Windows monopoly. And in fact, Microsoft's struggling with Windows 8.1. It is a bomb.
And if you look at Apple taking the iPad and really turning it into your next laptop, you know, iPads have already pulled all of this following with them and really undercut that market. And if they really move it into something that people really feel like, I have a couple iPads and I still feel like I have to do real work on my laptop. I'm not sold on that yet, but I think that if they can move that to a large population, I think that continues to drive that market down.
Yeah.
I used to work in enterprise, and I remember we had only, it was PCs as far as the eye could see. PC on every desk,
absolutely.
PC servers in the server room. Everyone had Windows, mobile phones, some Blackberries. And then the CEO got an iPhone because he thought it was cool. And then the VP of research and development got an iPhone. And then, you know, the head of tech support got an iPhone. And suddenly we had to support iPhones. And then I got a laptop because I was a design guy, and design guys can have a MacBook. And then, you know, the head of development got a MacBook because he wanted the battery life. You got a MacBook Air. And then, you know, another guy got it. And all of a sudden, the Apple stuff started moving from the top down instead of from IT up, and they were just forced to support it and
exactly.
continue to move from there. It was a total reversal of the previous model.
We all saw it happen. In fact, here's an article this week in the Wall Street Journal. Apple devices flow into the corporate world. The popularity of iPhone and iPad among employees is prompting corporate tech managers to rewrite policies and change traditional buying patterns. And by the way, another big loser, BlackBerry. Apple has, according to the journal, 8% of global business and government spending on computers in 2012. That's up from 1% in 2009.
Forrest, as I was leaving, they were replacing all the VGA projectors with Apple TVs.
Yeah, exactly. People start with the iPhone. It's the tip of the spear, says Chip Pearson, chief executive of JMF Software.
And then they realize that iTunes on Windows stinks. I got to get rid of this computer.
Well played, Apple. Well played.
Yes. I do think that interoperability is as big a factor, at least, as whatever Apple has done. Because back when, although that original model was certainly relevant, that was a time when you couldn't even have a Windows machine and a different kind of machine on the same network and expect those two things to work together.
Right. Apple did a very good job of that. Well, right? They really focused on that.
The internet helped them.
I'm saying that the world moved to the new technologies of networking, and really the world in general, made it less painful to pick whatever device you personally like. I mean, another interesting statistic over the last quarter is if you compare the amount of absorption of Google Chromebooks in enterprise versus Windows notebooks, Chromebooks are just kicking butt. And if you incorrectly look at the numbers, you might even think that they were actually outselling Windows. But the rate at which Chromebooks are being taken up by enterprise right now, simply by virtue of the fact that it's not even necessary to have a compatible operating system that runs what you might call real apps anymore. So long as you have a network capable computer that can connect to a central server where the real apps are being hosted, as long as you can connect to where the data is being hosted, everything else is kind of irrelevant. And a lot of companies are finding that we don't actually even need a MacBook Air. We can just simply issue these affordable devices that can easily be left in a cab without causing a whole bunch of damage to a lot of people. That's how big this interoperability has become.
Right. You're right. And that means it's easier to bring a Chromebook into work or a Mac into work or an iPad into work. Yeah. And once it becomes easier to do that, a huge diverse ecosystem blooms, and that's what Aras is saying.
It does show what trouble Microsoft is in, because their business has always been about selling Microsoft Windows licenses, and now that it's no longer, it's still again immensely popular, but it's not driving a lot of new purchases of Windows licenses either through upgrades or through purchases of new hardware. Now that the iPad is eating into that, and now that other manufacturers are eating into that, Microsoft is big enough that they can, you know, they can figure things out. But man, if they were in a weaker position, this would be one of those points where you're wondering how much longer can Microsoft keep this up.
Somebody in the chat room says, "You're kidding! Chromebooks in business." That's exactly the shocking headline from NPD, that Chromebooks were enjoying 21% of business. Now this is business notebook sales, not home sales. Business notebook sales in 2013, 21%. That is a lot of Chromebooks in business. I don't know who's using them, and I feel sorry for them. But
if it gets back to the idea of IT departments approving hardware, a lot of departments will love a Chromebook because the damn thing is damn near indestructible. Exactly. They configure themselves, they run themselves, and once again, if someone leaves something behind in a cab, that's a significantly less significant problem than if someone leaves a Windows 8 or Windows 7 notebook in a cab.
From the Wall Street Journal article, Nordstrom, and this is all anecdotal, but this gives you an idea. Nordstrom has deployed 24,000 iPads at its 261 stores, replacing their point-of-sales machines. Urban Outfitters staff uses customized iPod touches to check out customers, handle returns, and order out-of-stock products. They've deployed more than 1,000 iPod touches at its stores, including Anthropologie. They refer to a Cranston, Rhode Island jewelry chain. I go there all the time, Alex and Annie's, known for its bangle bracelets. They were using laptops running a web-based payment system. They replaced them with iPod touches with a custom app. They have 37 stores. They said that their wait times dropped significantly from Mother's Day last year to Mother's Day in 2013. Less than 10 minutes, same-store revenue doubled because of the shift to iPod touches. So that's all anecdotal, I admit, but it's definitely a new world. Yeah. And that's good. It's bad for BlackBerry, probably bad for Microsoft, good for Google, good for Apple. Yeah. And really, it's good for users because it means diversity is okay. You could choose the one you want.
I guess it's a horrible like wind of fresh air to designers or companies that that perhaps used to be patting themselves on the back, saying we've made the perfect device and people have responded to it because it is indeed the absolute exactly what the future is supposed to be like and exactly attaching to their needs. But then like a new device like a tablet comes out or like a really good powerful smartphone comes out, and that's when you find out that the reason why people were buying your notebooks is not because you built the perfect notebook, was simply because it was the only device that could handle the tasks that they had at that time. And all along, that wasn't the device they really wanted. It was just the only one that was available for sale. Right. And once you say, well, what if we take away the keyboard? What if we add battery life? What if we don't let you run desktop apps, but we'll run apps that are good enough and we sell it to you for $250? Would that do it for you? Why, yes, it would. Thank you very much.
Yes.
And again, like, and you look at in countries like here in Rwanda, the entire government standard issue is an iPad. Like that's what all the officials and everybody that you work with in the ministry.
Really?
The entire government is iPad.
Wow.
Like everybody has one. That's it. No one has a laptop. And they're always wandering around and they're just typing away. They run the entire Rwandan government on iPads.
Yeah. Bad news for Apple.
On an SD card.
Bad news for Apple. They wanted to get their antitrust judge replaced. We've talked before about the complaints Apple had about Michael Bromwich. He was put in place by Judge Cote. Apple felt that both Cote and Bromwich were biased against Apple. This is all in the e-books case.
So bizarre.
Department of Justice has responded to Apple and their request that Bromwich be removed because he's anti-Apple. The DOJ says, regrettably, it's now clear that Apple has chosen a campaign of character assassination over a culture of compliance. This is the Department of Justice attorneys. Apple could have been spending the past months working with the external compliance monitor with the ultimate goal of reforming its policies and training, and in the process change its corporate tone to one that reflects a commitment to abiding by the requirements of antitrust law. Instead, they focused on personally attacking Mr. Bromwich and thwarting him from performing even the most basic of his court-ordered functions. Apple felt that Bromwich was overreaching. He was trying to interview Apple execs not related to the trial. The judge denied the bid, saying, nope. Bromwich is there. You better live with it.
Well, it could be appealed.
Oh, well, of course it could be appealed.
I mean, this is.
I'm guessing it will be appealed.
I mean, if you're Apple, this is a good way to just drag it out.
Yeah. Well, I think Apple legitimately, perhaps, but I think Apple definitely believes that both Judge Cote and Bromwich are acting in a biased fashion.
And the DOJ. I mean, it's such a bizarre case. You think it's one of those crazy William Shatner-led trials from the TV shows.
I know.
Like the judges are meeting with
Denny Crane.
Are they old friends? Yeah, absolutely Denny Crane. Like the judge and the guy is an old friend. And, yeah. And there was an article in Slate, too, where they basically said that Amazon was getting everything they wanted out of this because now they're free to do... I mean, it's not that the government went after fixing the ebook industry. They went after Apple and left Amazon all by itself, which struck some people the wrong chord as well. But the entire thing, I mean, even if the stuff is incorrect, it looks like just for the sake of propriety and justice that they should at least appoint someone who's external to get involved at this point.
Well, the court just said, no, this is the guy you got. You better work with him.
Well, the court so far...
So far.
I mean, you know, the thing is that, and I think that also Apple has made it clear that they're going to, you know, that they're going to take the offense on this. And so I think that the other thing is, I think that there's this in, when we see this in Washington, D.C., this little push and pull, Apple wouldn't have pushed and pulled if they didn't think they had a, you know, a dog to hunt. And so I think that they're, by doing this from a political perspective, I think it also allows them to put both the judge, I think the judge and the attorney probably stepped out of bounds somewhere, and Apple probably has a pretty good idea that they did, or at least has a pretty good assumption that they did. And I think that they're going to keep on trying to hide that. And that, yeah. and by doing that, that pushes them all back from Apple. If there was any impropriety that has already been denied, that's called perjury. And so now both of those folks, if they crossed any lines and if they lied about it, Apple has them in a vice because they're just going to keep on pushing and they're going to keep on digging, and it's going to, and it means that if he keeps on pushing in, they have something to keep on wrapping around. And so I think that, I mean, if I was Apple, I would do exactly the same.
I think you nailed Apple's strategy exactly on this. And in fact, from the things Apple said, I think it's pretty clear they feel that both the judge and Bromwich have overstepped their bounds. And I'm sure that they expect. Right. I'm sure, but even delaying it is good, but I'm sure they expect at some point to get to a court that will agree with them and take Judge Cote off the case and replace Bromwich.
Not being taken off the case, it's being taken off the bench. I mean,
right. They're talking serious. Happens. You're right. Now, it's I can see your dad's influence on this, by the way. Do people know? Does he still work?
Oh, no, my dad's still, he's a very, very accomplished lawyer. He was a federal prosecutor. So, yeah,
about what you're talking about here.
Yeah, well, this is something that I grew up, you know, when I was seven, we used to go to watch court cases about this. And this is how people saying I never did this and we never had these meetings is how this always begins.
Yep.
You know, and the thing is that it, you know, and so this is a very, I mean, I'm not saying that I don't know. I wasn't there. I don't know what happened. But I'm saying that it really smells like someone stepped in the wrong, you know,
I gotta say, it's I mean, I'm not an attorney, but that seems like an extraordinarily strongly worded letter from the DOJ.
Yeah, Apple's was. I mean, it's one of those Oliver Babbage moments where, you know, if you lied a little bit, if you lied once, that's game over. Right. The thing in the chat room, people are saying that she formed an opinion before the trial started, but in this case, that's her job. She had all the evidence, and she'd formed a preliminary opinion, and then it's up to Apple and the DOJ to argue the case. So it's not that she was biased from the outset, but I think as the questions that Alex mentioned about her friendship with the monitor, the amount he's charging, the fact that he wasn't experienced in the job that he was hired to do, so he had to hire an outside person at his, you know, double the billing rate to do the job he was hired to do, and that he wanted to interview everybody from Johnny Ive to the janitor, seemingly. There's enough craziness going on that it makes something smell bad.
It does. I feel the same way. And we've talked about this before. This is just yet another skirmish in the ongoing.
And even if they didn't do anything illegal, Apple's just going to keep on making it smell until they're going to try to make him give up by just continuing to drag it out. And I'm sure that you can, you know, these guys can be assured that there are all kinds of private investigators and doing everything that they can legally do to figure out what's going on and everything else about them. You know, this is definitely personal, I think, for Apple. Yep, I think they're going to, you know.
They feel wronged.
Hey, good news. You've been waiting for it. Aaron Sorkin has announced that he has completed the screenplay for the Steve Jobs biopic.
How many Sorkinisms are in it? Do we know yet?
We don't know. We don't know. I'm trying to get the script from his trash.
I'm just going to go back to the Sorkinisms YouTube thing, and then I'm just going to write
this. So funny.
I was watching it this morning again.
Oh, my gosh.
Think?
I can't watch any of his stuff anymore because either I'm hearing it or I'm waiting for it.
Took him almost 2 years to write this script. He first got the job in the spring of 2012. And here we are almost the spring of 2014. And
when he announced it is when Sorkinisms came out. And I think he decided he was going to try to write an entire script without
with
any
that
Sorkinisms.
One? And it just realized so hard.
He had Newsroom. Came from the renewal of Newsroom for season 3, which apparently was excruciating negotiation. And then the last paragraph was, oh, by the way, he's also turned in the script for The Kutcher-free Steve Jobs movie.
As it will forever be known now. We talked about this a little bit already on, was it on Twit? The 7th anniversary of the iPhone announcement. And I was thinking back, we even played a little bit of the announcement. Was it? I think it was on Twit, wasn't it, Chad? It was 7 years ago this week that I think, Alex, you were with me, right? And Andy, were you there too? And you were there, and you were there, and you, and you, and you were there. I was sitting next to Scott Bourne, Alex Lindsay, Merlin Mann. Remember, I mean, we were talking on MacBreak Weekly for months about an Apple phone, whether it would be called the iPhone. Scott Bourne was so convinced. He was so excited. Let me play a little bit of the keynote because I would say this, the moment in this keynote when he first introduces the iPhone today still gives me chills.
Greatest keynote from a guy whose life was filled with great keynotes.
I think there's no doubt in my mind, and I think about the iPad. By the way, this is going to be the backbone of Aaron Sorkin's movie is announcements, but not the ones we're thinking. The iPod announcement, the Macintosh announcement, according to what he said a year and a half ago at All Things D.
And the next Cube.
And the next Cube announcement, which is a very strange one to pick.
No, that's perfect.
Huh?
Yeah, I mean, Kutcher ignored the next.
If you're telling the story of Steve Jobs and you omit the next Cube, you failed. Because that's when next is the part of his life where he stopped being somebody who was part of that that did not have complete and total control over a company top to bottom, and that's where he became the CEO.
Right,
it was his first CEO position. Anyway, it's
no, I think you're right. I don't know why YouTube is this our bandwidth? Is it YouTube? I want to play this clip.
Darn it!
All the CES videos processing.
You know, if I had a Mac Pro right now, I probably wouldn't be having this trouble.
We had 60 up bandwidth at the hotel, and it was taking 40 minutes to upload a video because YouTube was so backed up.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me see if I can find this. This is a seminal moment. Yeah, here it is. Here we go. All right. Steve Jobs. And I wish there was a little video of you, me, and Scott Bourne in the audience here reacting to this. Can you hear the audio?
In 2001... we introduced the first iPod. And
his, by the way, he plays the audience so well in this. His sense of drama and timing is impeccable.
It changed the entire music industry. Well, today, we're introducing three revolutionary products of this class.
Scott Bourne goes, what?
What? The first one is a widescreen iPod with touch controls.
The audience, I think, a little baffled at this point. We're expecting an iPhone announcement. I mean, we don't know for sure, but...
the second is a revolutionary mobile phone.
That's the one Scott Bourne wanted to hear. You heard that, yeah.
And they're showing the interface, the icons already.
That's right. That's the first time we saw that, isn't it?
And the third is a breakthrough internet communications device.
Now they're really confused.
So,
really confused.
Three
Watch
things.
This is brilliant.
A widescreen iPod with touch controls, a revolutionary mobile phone, and a breakthrough internet communications device.
Weird to see a keynote slide with just the word phone on it, not the I.
An iPod, a phone, and an internet communicator. An iPod, a phone.
So patient.
Single greatest moment in keynote history right there.
These are not three separate devices. This is one device. And we are calling it iPhone. Today, Apple is going to reinvent the phone. And here it is.
Very nicely done, I thought. Little joke, he shows an iPod with a dial on it. Actually, as we learned from Fred Vogelstein's book, Dogfight, which has this whole... you've got to read
watch this keynote and then read the backstory of all the iPhone developers in the front row drinking heavily during this. Yeah. And apparently what the backstory of that is, they did in fact consider an iPhone that would have the click wheel, would look just like an iPod with a click wheel.
Tony Fadell's iPhone.
Yeah.
Man, it's just, but the, you should seek that video out and play it all the way to the end and realize that when that keynote was over, I was standing there, everyone's cheering and jumping around. And the first thing I thought was, if the last thing that Steve Jobs had said at the end of this keynote was, "Now go out and kill in my name," that would have been a very bad day for San Francisco. That's what you call a successful keynote.
The master of the height of his craft.
And you look at that, and having one keynote, and when you talk to engineers that work on phones, we do a lot of stuff around phone engineers, all of them pretty much had to take whatever they were doing, throw it away, and start over again.
That's exactly what happened at Google. That's what Vogelstein talks about in Dogfight, is that Google engineers looked at it and said, oh. And they threw out everything they'd done to that date. That was it.
Yeah. And they weren't warned.
And the
they
ones that didn't,
Apple,
are,
but they didn't
are,
warn them about the iPhone,
under.
Which was
right.
interesting.
Right. And Samsung said, quick, copy it. pretty cool stuff. 7 years ago. It's been a fast 7 years, hasn't it? All of those transitions we just talked about in business, the move to mobile, the move to touch, the Internet of Things, all of this has happened since then in 7 years. What an amazing era. Aren't we lucky to live in this time?
Yep. It makes you wonder when you talk about future Apple products, if you put that sentence, today Apple reinvents the blank, what word could you put there that would be as significant as phone?
The wristwatch?
How people use technology.
I don't think so.
The wristwatch doesn't sound as big. TV doesn't sound as big.
No. TV maybe.
How about the word home?
Yeah. See, that's where the Nest acquisition is very strategically intriguing, because to go full circle here, is that it's Google saying, we're going to reinvent the home, not Apple today. That's very interesting.
We'll tell you how to use it.
We're going to take a break and come back with our tips, or I'm sorry, our picks of the week in just a bit. Andy Yannacco, Renee Ritchie, Alex Lindsay. Our show today brought to you by Audible.com. I'm looking at the screensaver on my Mac Pro, and it puts up the album art. Can you see that? It puts up the album art. And it's like a lot of Audible books. I listened to some music, but a lot of Audible books. There's the Pete Townsend book, Who I Am. Boy, that was a great book. Margaret Atwood's The Blind Assassin, great book. The Hours, great book. I mean, I'm just thinking Crime and Punishment, The Dangerous Animals Club by Stephen Tobolowsky. That was your recommendation, Andy.
One of my favorite picks ever.
Yeah.
My favorite audiobooks ever.
No Easy Day, the story of the SEAL team that got Osama bin Laden. The Iliad of Homer. I listened to that when we went to Troy. I loved walking through the walls of Troy listening to the Iliad. That was a moment. This is why I love Audible. Stephen King, The Gunslinger, what a great book. This is why I love Audible. I have been listening to Audible books, audiobooks from audible.com since 2000. I have over 500 books in my library. That's a lot of them right there. And to me, it's just a world of wonderful entertainment, of learning. Great way to pass the time on that horrible commuter stuck in a plane for 12 hours or even at the gym on the treadmill. I mean, as bad as being in a plane for 12 hours is, being on a treadmill in the gym for an hour is pretty much right up there. But if I've got Audible, it goes by like that. I'll spend a few minutes extra on the treadmill because I'm listening to a great book. I want you to try Audible.com with more than 150,000 titles in every area, fiction, nonfiction, history, periodicals. You're sure to find something you like. The trick is finding that one audiobook that I'm going to give you for free when you visit audible.com/MacBreak. Fortunately, we have Andy Yannacco with us, and he's always recommending great books. Before you do recommend your book, I do want to mention yesterday on Triangulation, we interviewed Brad Stone about his book, which I've been listening to Audible. It's The Everything Store, the story of Amazon and Jeff Bezos. And it's a great Audible listen. And a great book. So I'm going to recommend that. And along with it, listen to our interview yesterday with the author, Brad Stone. Andy, what are you listening to?
This is sort of a personal pick. Okay, they're all personal picks. But I've recently become a little bit fascinated by Truman Capote. Because after watching both of the biopics about him writing In Cold Blood, both movies really made the case that writing this book
broke him about halfway. And so I started reading about a little bit about his life. And it turns out that he wrote a second book that was also that really, for some reason, just destroyed him. The second one was a book called Answered Prayers, in which his social life was all about these like New York high society women. And so he wrote this thinly veiled novel in which he basically used every piece of gossip that they ever gave him and published it in a series of short stories for this book that he got $1 million advance for. But as soon as Esquire started excerpting early chapters from this, instantly he became a pariah in New York. And so any story about Truman Capote becomes a discussion of why the hell did he write this book?
Because he was Truman Capote.
Exactly. Well, again, and the discussion being split between that he literally thought that the reason why all these society dames were telling him this gossip was because they knew that he was a writer, they knew that he would use it. It was all fair game. And other people saying that again, he was just broken at that point. And he just, if this is part of, this is the start of a self-destructive spiral that would take him all the way to an early grave, sex, drugs, alcohol, everything.
Sounds good. So I'll take it.
Exactly. So this is a book all about that second book he wrote, Answered Prayers. And again, getting into the world that he was living in at that time and speculating why he did it, what his motivations were and what New York society life was like in the late 60s and mid 70s. So this would almost be like a trilogy of books that I've audiobooks that I've listened to about Truman Capote. The second one being a book about the black and white ball that he threw to celebrate the publication of In Cold Blood, which in itself was was a pretty exciting book. So there are books that I recommend because like Dangerous Animals, it's just a fantastic book for everybody. 10 out of 10 out of everything. This time I'm really interested in the story. I've got a lot of driving coming up, and so I know that this is going to be a good thing to listen to. And also it's narrated by Alex Hyde White, which is one of my favorite narrators.
I'm fascinated by Truman Capote. I totally share your interest. And, of course, In Cold Blood is an amazing piece of journalism. And Breakfast at Tiffany's, you know, who can forget that? But I did not know this story about Answered Prayers and about self-destructing. So I can't wait to read this.
And it was his unfinished book. And it's also legendary because he promised everybody he had written it. He'd shown the manuscript to people. And yet when he died, it was incomplete and nobody could find the complete manuscript that he had referred to, that he had quoted from. Again, it's not as though he was BSing people. It was like if he would come to people's houses, like a friend, to sort of bounce ideas off them, and we would read like multiple chapters. So it's just part of the mystery of this book that, again, ruined a great writer, yet another weapon with which he decided to do suicide by society dame.
Yeah. Fascinating. Tiny Terror, it's called. And I share your fascination with Truman Capote. It's interesting. I guess because I mean, you're not old enough, but I grew up seeing him on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson and stuff. And he was quite a character and a celebrity. And then you see his body of work and you go, well, he's actually a great writer. Good choice. So here's how you get this for free. Audible.com/MacBreak. You'll be signing up for the Gold Plan. That's a book a month subscription. Nice thing is, first 30 days are free. You pay nothing. You'll get a book. You can keep it, cancel anytime in the first 30 days. That's it. But the book is yours forever. I don't think you're going to want to cancel. I mean, there are so many great books on audible.com. It's an endless supply of entertainment, information, education. audible.com/MacBreak. Try it out today. Just looking at my screensaver. God Is Not Great, Christopher Hitchens, another great book. Stephen King, Wolves of Kala. That's part of that whole weird gunslinger series that I've never quite finished. Legion. That was a great book. Really enjoyed that. It's kind of fun. That's a nice screensaver. My album art screensaver. Let us get our...
Show how educated you are, Leo.
I am an educated man. I've read many books, listened to Def Jam and Johnny Cash together, and, you know, that just kind of does it all for me. I don't need to tell you what my pick of the week is. It's my baby.
Hey, man, secret weapon. Precious. Duct tape.
It's my baby. I will do a full review of it before you buy later this afternoon.
Suffice to say, while I was skeptical, Apple really did knock it out of the park. It's a beautiful thing. And you know, the gaffer's tape's good, too. Alex Lindsay in Kigali, Rwanda, with the best connection of anybody. What's your pick of the week?
So when I'm traveling, I'm always thinking about the whole what we're traveling with. And one of the things that we have gotten into buying while we're traveling, this is when you're powering your Mac on the road. Have you seen these? These are international. I know it seems
so that handles
basic.
Any kind of plug
and 110 and 240. So basically you can plug it, you know, anytime you want to plug it in, you can plug it in.
So that's a universal power strip, but what's on the other end? I mean, what do you plug it into?
This one just has a regular, you can buy.
So that would be for using international products in the U.S. because that's got a U.S. plug on it.
It is. But what you can do is essentially a lot of times when we're on the road, you may have things that you have locally and not locally.
Said anything about your bandwidth. All of a sudden it's falling apart.
What happened?
Everybody went to school. What time is it in Kigali?
What time is it? It's almost 11 o'clock.
At night or in the morning?
At night.
Oh.
But I've been having trouble with my webcam, so it might actually be something else. It keeps on popping, so we'll see how this goes.
That's a really interesting product. So it's a power strip with international plugs.
Yeah, and so what we do is you can of course buy any kind of little adapter for $10 that'll convert to anything you're gonna plug into. So what I do is I get those, and then I get this, and that means that basically I can plug anything into. Anything into here. So when I'm there, if someone else has a charger that they want to use, or if we're in it with a crew, and we can just plug anything in. And by the way, there's hotel rooms with these in the walls, and that is the way to go. I don't understand how any hotel room doesn't just put this plug into their walls, because it just makes it, everybody visiting can make it work. The other thing that I think I've talked about before, but I'm traveling. These are the key to the operation. See, these are different MiFis.
Oh.
So this is just the one I use in the U.S. This is the Verizon, LTE one that I use. And then this one is the one that you can get. It doesn't matter which one you get. I mean, it depends on what country. Now, when I go into countries, I buy one from almost every country. If I think I'm going to come back, I'm sure that I could try to figure out SIMs and everything else, but... But what I do is I buy one so that I always have this. The last time I didn't have one in Rwanda, and the bill was, it was bad. It was really bad. And $2,200 or something like that in phone calls. So what you do is, of course, you use this and then you use FaceTime audio. I meet everyone on GoToMeeting. I can do a lot of things, do FaceTime, all those other things. And so by having one of these, you don't worry as much about your minutes. You just make sure that you kind of change a little bit of your lifestyle. You make all those phone calls, without spending a penny on it. And of course, all your iMessages go through to all your iPhone friends. So these are just key. And the most important part of this is that if anyone asks you, you can put these in your back pocket, and you always, whenever necessary, can just say, I've got bandwidth coming out my ass.
Would you like to? Okay, I was explaining what a shaggy dog story was to Michael the other day. That was a shaggy dog story. A long way to go for a pun. A silly punchline. I've got bandwidth coming out of my ass. Thank you, Alex Lindsay.
Exactly.
Renee Ritchie, your pick of the week.
I have two. I have one that's a little self-serving at first. We launched a new website, because WebOS Nation is now on blocks up in our smartphone experts' driveway. We're not doing much of that anymore. CrackBerry is not as busy as it used to be, so we took the guy who was managing CrackBerry, Adam Zeiss, and he started a new site for us called Smartwatch Fans.
Oh, you were looking ahead.
Yeah, CES... They had a whole, wrist power pavilion. They had the Pebble Steel announcement. They had more smartwatches than I could keep track of. And I was lucky I didn't have to, because Adam was doing it all on Smartwatch Fans. We also went down to Palo Alto when I came up to Petaluma that day. And we interviewed Pebble, and we did interviews with everybody. So this is going to be where we put all our smartwatch coverage going forward.
That's an interesting choice. It's a fairly narrow vertical. Instead of saying a wearables site, you said, we're going to go with fans. Is that your experience, that the more narrow, the more likely you're going to build a crowd?
Yeah, well, our sites are always community-driven. I mean, we started with Visor Central, and that was
right.
And we started then Trio Central, and it's always been about the community, and those people tend to want to talk with people about specific things, you know, because otherwise they spend a lot of time fighting. And yeah, they don't mind fighting about which iPhone you get, but it's better than the perpetual battle between iPhone right. and, you know. And
that's this, that's an interesting point. The community would be less fractious if you're more narrowly focused.
It has its pros and cons because, for example, if you put all our sites together, we're fairly large, but no one sees us that way. So it ends up looking like a bunch of niche sites.
Right.
So there's pros and cons. But so far, this approach has really worked for us. And we wanted to start another site, and we managed to squeak it through right at New Year's. So it's where I'm going now for all my smartphone stuff. And it's going to have a lot of great coverage, you know, especially coming out of CES with all the new watches that were announced.
So iMore.com, Android Central, CrackBerry. Not so busy these days. Windows Phone Central, WP Central, and smartwatches is at smartwatchfans.com. And you said there's a new one, a mobile phone one?
Well, that's no. The new one is Smartwatch Fans. That's the latest site. Okay. We launched it on New Year's.
Okay, cool. Congratulations.
My other pick of the week.
Yes.
Oh, thank you. My other pick of the week is I actually searched this up and I picked it before and it was the same time of year and I knew immediately why, but it's Tripit Pro and it's because I start the trade show season and I start traveling and so far nothing has been better for me to keep track of all that stuff than Tripit Pro. I get a reservation for a plane or for a hotel. I email it to Tripit Pro and then it just takes care of it. And I have my most recent trip up on my iPhone screen now and it is bright red from delays. And it has never failed to alert me, not only before the airline does, but hours and hours before the airline does about delays. So in Vegas, I didn't even go to the airport because, you know, Air Canada told me the flight was fine. Tripit told me that it was 2 hours and then 3 hours delayed. And if I'd just been listening to the airline, I would have been sitting at the airport waiting instead of sitting in a Vegas hotel waiting. And you know, I pay for Tripit Pro. I pay for the ad-free app. They have more than made up for these, you know, small subscription fee that they charge. And I just don't go traveling without it anymore. All my reservations, all my trips are, you know, a couple taps away.
So I'm on my trip at... Go ahead. You travel a lot, Alex, so I know you probably have a lot of things to say about this.
I've compared a lot of them, and I'm happy with Tripit Pro as well. So Tripit Pro is the one that I've been using. And the other thing is one of the things we're looking at is I guess they have a whole admin tool. So if you have a bunch of people in your company, you can actually have someone administrating them and managing everybody's Tripit and knowing where everybody is and everything else. And that's what we're about to move into.
Isn't that handy?
You can also share, like Phil Nickinson from our Android site and I are buddies, so we can see each other's trips because we travel a lot. And if you want to, if you're comfortable doing it, you can share your Gmail credentials and you don't even have to forward stuff to Tripit. It'll just pull that stuff out of your Gmail as you get it.
That's what I do. And it does. And there's a little bit of social stuff. So I'm in second place for the number of countries visited after Noel Morales, but apparently I'm not following Alex because he'd probably be number one there. I've traveled 247,123 miles to 68 locations. I'm going to add you, Renee, to my Tripit friends so I can compete with you. I love Tripit. I really do. It's so great.
It's fantastic.
The Pro isn't that expensive.
No, and they redesigned their iOS app now for iOS 7, and it's got a card-based interface that is really nice. I mean, everything is – when you're moving through an airport, the last thing you want to do is have to start looking for small amounts of text. So the cards are really glanceable. It gives you all the information. I can typically find my flight number, my reservation number faster on Tripit than I can on the tickets or the email stuff. So,
I live on it. And I don't travel anywhere near as much as you and Alex do.
When I started business traveling like at age like 19 or 20, I really wish that now that I'd taken a picture of everything that I carried in my bags and everything that I carried in my pockets when I left for an airport and could just cross off like 90% of that stuff I don't need to take anymore. All the way from like all the alligator clips that get me to plug into whatever hotel phone system is in there, all the way to here's all the pieces of paper that I need, the tickets that I need to make sure that I pick up, that the information I need to have handy. Because, yeah, Tripit is like magical. You pull out this one app, you pull out this one, tap this one button, it recognizes that, oh, today's the day you're taking off. So I bet you're really interested in seeing how your flight to San Francisco is doing. Marvel stuff.
Finally, Andy Iannacco, your pick of the week.
My pick is a website called instantwatcher.com. Which is invaluable for your, if you're a Netflix subscriber, because it will simply, it's a much, much easier and more flexible way of seeing what's available on the service than anything that any of the Netflix apps let you do. And for me, the big deal is that one tab at the very beginning that simply says new. So it will show you everything that's been recently added to Netflix, because as you know, they have package deals that keep coming in and coming out, and so they'll lose a whole bunch of Disney movies, but then they'll get back in Raging Bull and two Mel Brooks movies and Some Like It Hot, and you might not even know that they're available. Like there you go. There's a Mystery Science Theater 3000 movie. There's Amelie, which I haven't seen in years. I wouldn't have known it was on Netflix until I saw that. Oh, look, it's just arrived back on January 1st.
And Leave It to Beaver season 6. The long, long missed.
If you go to page 4, now they have like all 12 seasons of Murder, She Wrote. And before you get too excited about that, 6 My Little Pony specials.
A Very Minty Christmas. Dancing in the Clouds, Friends Are Never Far Away, The Princess Promenade, and The Runaway Rainbow. Plus a special bonus, Tinkle Wish Adventure. Wow.
No, that's Twinkle Wish Adventure. That's a very different streaming service altogether. No pun intended.
Raging Bull is now on Netflix. See, I wouldn't have known that. Right. That's awesome.
Yep. Yeah. And even for stuff that's already been on there for a while, it's just so easy to just click on buttons and browse by category. They also have categories for New York Times critics picks, Rotten Tomatoes, Rated Fresh.
Yeah.
So then I don't know why Netflix doesn't just make this part of their site, because as it is, it's just too hard to find. They'll recommend things for you, and that works kind of okay, but there's just something so as disgustingly analog as it is to simply scroll through a list and look for things that leap out at you. That's how you find a lot of great movies.
I use the Canadian version of this, and you know, to Andy's point, I go on Netflix and I look at, it's so confusing, latest added new features, and none of them are actually new. I've seen them there for months. So I go to a website like this and it just shows me everything, and I find almost something immediately. I think I just started watching Covert Affairs last week because I found it there and still can't find it on the Netflix site.
Wow, this is really great. Instantwatcher.com. Great pick. Thank you, Andy. I much appreciate that. Friends, that concludes this edition of Mac Break Weekly. Thank you to Renee Ritchie, iMore.com, and of course the new site, Smartwatch Today. What is it?
SmartwatchFans.com.
Smartwatch Fans.
We were joking because at CES, no one could get it right. People were calling it Smartphone Fans. People were calling it SmartwatchPhoneFans. So we just started joking, you know, SmartwatchPhoneFans.co.uk. You know, make it as long as possible.
SmartwatchFans.com. Thank you, Renee. Great to see you again. Alex, Lindsay, enjoy your evening in Kilgally. You're free now for a few more hours.
Hey, and if anyone is interested, I did a bunch of all my reviews in CES with Glass, and it'd be really fun to get people's feedback on it. It's on my G Plus page, so I shot the whole thing with Glass, and it actually worked out pretty well. But definitely take a look at him and let me know what you think.
He's Plus Alex Lindsay, LINDSAY on Google Plus, and really, I think a great way to do it.
Yeah, it works really well. You have a lot of you have your hands back, and what was surprising, I was really in loud environments, and I didn't use anything extra. I just literally just shot it, and I was really surprised. The audio isn't perfect, but it was a lot better than I expected.
A lot of people, I posted some side-by-side comparisons of like photos, just getting people's opinions on which photo do you like best. And I tossed in a couple of Google Glass photos, and I was surprised at how many people liked that specific photo better than they liked the iPhone 5S photo. People, this just takes some really great stuff. I got the new version of Glass, and it's broken. It doesn't work
anymore. Oh, no. Oh,
man. I have to go back to the salon.
Andy.
Yeah, break your glass.
Stupid.
Break your mother's back. Andy Anatko, Chicago Sun-Times, Celestial Waste of Bandwidth, and of course Anatko's Almanac at 5x5.tv. Thank you, Andy, for being here.
Thank you, Leo.
Thanks to everybody for watching the show. 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC Tuesdays for Mac Break Weekly. If you want to watch live, we love it if you do. If you can't, though, don't worry
about it. On-demand audio and video available after the fact always at twit.tv/MBW or on iTunes, wherever else you get your NICS. Thanks for being here. Now get back to work, because you know what? Break time's over.
While you've got the gaffer tape out, just cover up the webcam on your notebook before you have your alone time with the Mac Pro.
You never know. Alan. You know what's great about the Mac Pro? No webcam, so no one can see you loving your computer.
$9.95 per minute.
Not available in the District of Columbia.
Rub my Apple.
Somewhere there's an Apple engineer feeling really uncomfortable.
He's like, I never planned that.
I love that music.